So
it stopped raining.
Oh, good. So it's not pitter-patter on your window.
No, it was a full-on thunderstorm. Now, I know that people in California might not know what that means. So that's when water and electricity fall from the sky at the same time and makes a big boom sound.
Thanks, Sammy. We know what thunderstorms are. Probably not like the epic storm that you just probably went through, but we occasionally, like maybe once a year for like 20 minutes, have a thunderstorm.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
It's like insanity. There's people dancing in the street. We're like, you know, it worked. But no, we actually have had a pretty mild summer. Like this August is like not bad.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm used to like, you know, by August, it's like 115 all month.
We've only had one 115 degree day.
I mean, that's still a 115 degree day, but
I'm kidding, listeners. We had like maybe a couple of 100 degree days, but yeah, it's been like 85. Like today's 91. It's August.
That's really nice, actually, for that part of California.
Exactly. It was 85
like really
yesterday.
Nice.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Wow. Well, lucky. Of course, the year I leave, the weather gets better in California. Okay, of course.
You took you and your drought, your thirst with you, so.
Yeah, and now I'm getting more water than I can handle.
Oh,
so
hey.
Thirsty.
So thirsty. Make it rain. So,
make
yeah.
Make it rain.
It's been really pleasant here, but yeah. Ooh, that reminds me. I have an update before we get into stuff.
Okay.
To a previous episode.
Ooh, okay.
So I came across this when I was browsing Reddit. You know, doing something I wasn't supposed to be doing while I was supposed to be doing something else, as usual.
Of course, as we do.
It's what this podcast is all about, right? Doing something you're not supposed to be doing.
Exactly.
So, but my apologies if this has already been a thing, but I stumbled on a little update to one of last season's episodes that I wanted to share. An eagle eye on Reddit put this together, but there were a few things I've corrected, but for the most part, this is like pretty bizarre. Baron Trump may be a time traveler.
Oh.
And here's the evidence. Okay.
All right, I'm ready.
So in 1983, an author named Ingersoll Lockwood wrote a series of children's novels starting with Baron Trump's Marvelous Underground Journey. It's about a boy named Baron Trump who found a secret portal and traveled through time. Naturally, we know there's a Baron Trump of current fame, one of the first sons of Mr. Trump. Even the like original illustrations look eerily similar to Baron. So I'm going to share my screen with you so you can see this. See, they look like eerily similar.
Oh, that's kind of creepy.
They look. Okay. Now I'm going to continue because it gets weirder. Okay.
Oh, God. Okay. I'm ready.
Weirder still, in the book, Baron seeks the help of a mentor named Dawn, and the whole thing happens in Russia.
Get out.
I'm not even making this up, guys. Now, the poster of this feed.
I got goosebumps.
The poster of this feed tries to lump Melania's home country of Slovenia in with Russia, but they need a map or a quick Google search because they're not really anywhere near each other.
Yeah, right.
But I digress. It gets weirder. 4 years later, in 1896, the same author wrote a sequel to the book, but calls it The Last President.
Oh, my God. Oh, I'm literally getting chills and I'm sweating.
And I'm going to make it worse.
Oh, God. Okay.
So this book is about a wealthy man who lived in New York on Fifth Avenue.
I'm going to throw up.
Who ran for president.
No.
But wasn't expected to win.
You're making this up.
I know. I'm not. I know. I'm sorry. This is, Snopes is even like. Like
fact checked it.
Confirm this. This is real. And Trump Tower is on Fifth Avenue. So in the book, he wins and it surprises everybody and people start rioting and protesting. And after his inauguration, he starts signing a ton of executive orders. He starts picking members of his cabinet. Mm-hmm. And among them is the Secretary of Agriculture, Lafay Pence.
No.
Isn't this weird? This is so weird.
This is creepy.
And it's like, this is a book. This was a book that was written
in the 1800s.
In the 1800s.
I'm going to throw up.
Over 124 years ago. Okay. So here's where the story loops back around to one of my previous topics. You may remember the last season I touched on the missing files of Nikola Tesla.
Right.
He died in New York of a blood clot. And before his death, he claimed to have built a time machine and had already used it to travel backwards and forwards in time.
Right.
After he died, the U.S. government took possession of his inventions and his notes. But since they couldn't understand most of it, they called in a favor from an MIT engineer who could understand it. Mm-hmm. The current president's uncle, John G. Trump, which I mentioned in the episode.
Yeah.
After studying the notes and inventions of Tesla, Trump came back and said there wasn't anything useful there. But what if he lied and kept the invention to himself as a legacy? And then to make things even weirder, this person also tacked on a couple more tidbits that Trump's mother's name was Mary and his father's middle name was Christ. And he was born on the night of the total lunar eclipse, which I think ties back to the Antichrist. Mm. But I'm not going to go there. But going back to could Ingersoll be a pseudonym and that his uncle traveled forward? We've lived out this tale and he came back here.
Oh, that's creepy.
Like, isn't that also weird?
Well, I mean, remember our swap episode last season, I talked about Project Pegasus, which was Tesla's time travel machines. Mm-hmm. So it ties into that as well.
Exactly.
Oh. I'm literally like covered in goosebumps right now. That is so creepy.
I found this a month ago and I've been dying to share it with you.
You've been sitting on this for a month?
Maybe a month, maybe like 2 weeks. I guess it's been since we last recorded. So.
Okay.
But yes.
Okay. Oh my God.
It's felt like a month. So wasn't that neat?
Oh, that's just really creepy. I just can't get over that. No, that's not okay.
It's not. It's really not. I don't really know what to do with this information, though. So.
I don't either. So you shared it with the rest of us,
I
and
did.
Now we carry this burden with you.
Now you can bring it to your friends.
All right. Well, are you ready to shake a penny for our thoughts?
I am. I got it right here. I have it ready this time, guys. Maybe this will be in my favor, and I'll get to go first for once. Penny for my thoughts. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you get to pick, so.
Okay. So let's see. We're shaking, and I'm going to pick Tails this time.
Okay.
Because who needs Sonic? It's all about Tails, right? It's heads. You let me down, Tails.
Do you just want to go first?
Every time. Yes, I will go first. Actually.
Okay, you can go first. You can go first.
I'm going to override this time.
We'll let you have this. You go first.
Okay. So, sorry, I'm breaking the rules, breaking the law.
That's okay.
All right. So I actually was going to. So I told you earlier this week that I was going to make you laugh with mine.
Yes.
But I'm going to save that one because I found something actually more interesting while I was doing that research.
Okay.
It got debunked immediately. But the way people kind of back up their evidence for this one, I thought was kind of interesting. So.
Okay.
I still think it's a little plausible because I was telling producer Ian about it and he was like, yeah, this is kind of cool. Okay. So on April 15th, 1912, approximately 1,500 people died when the Titanic sank after colliding with an iceberg.
Right,
we've all seen the old lady ditch the diamond in the end, right? So
it's been 84 years.
But what if I told you it wasn't the Titanic that sank?
Okay.
Everyone agrees that a lot of lives were lost that day. And that a ship definitely sank in the Atlantic. But one conspiracy suggests the ship wasn't actually the technical marvel that was promised. In fact, it was an attempt at insurance fraud.
Oh.
Hmm.
Okay.
So this is one of the most controversial and elaborate theories about the Titanic. And it was forwarded by Robin Gardner in his book, Titanic, The Ship That Never Sank. In it, he draws on several events and coincidences that occurred in the months, days, and hours leading up to the sinking of the Titanic. And we're going to discuss those, a few of those in this episode.
Okay.
Other researchers have also delved into the deep, that is the strange conspiracy, like Steve Hall and Bruce Beveridge, who wrote the books Titanic or Olympic, which ship sank, and Titanic, the ship Magnificent. There's also Mark Chernside, who will pop up a little bit later. He's devoted some of his research to why a switch would be made, especially for the insurance. We'll come back to that.
Okay.
So the British White Star Line. So I'm going to give you a little bit of background on why these ships were created in the first place.
Right. Okay.
The British White Star Line had stiff competition in England and around the globe, but none more so than its fierce rivalry with the Cunard Steamship Company. That company sent two of the world's then largest passenger ships in their maiden voyages in 1906 and 07, the Lusitania and the Mauritania.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, right.
So the Lusitania should sound familiar because it's sinking off the coast of the southern island of the hands of the German U-boat in 1915 mm-hmm. was a precursor to the United States declaration of war on Germany 2 years later.
Right. Yep.
So to compete with Cunard and the giant ship war, the White Star Line got into the cruise line business. They were already okay. rivals at this point. And with Cunard's Lusitania and the Mauritania outgunning White Star's big four ships in the terms of top speed. But this time around, White Star had a little extra help from J.P. Morgan. In 1902, White Star became a property owned by the International Mercantile Marine Company, or IMM, which was a holding company bankrolled by a famed financier, J.P. Morgan. Mm-hmm. So he was like giving them the money for it and stuff. He was financing the whole White Star, or the company that owned White Star.
Okay.
This is where the priorities shifted. If they couldn't make the ships faster than Cunard's Monster, they would make them extremely opulent. They were the most luxurious ships you could get on.
Oh, yeah. They were gorgeous.
Exactly. Like we've seen the reenactment, you know, James Cameron's beautiful mm-hmm. depiction of what the inside of this thing looked like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we have so many like reference photos and stuff of what it looked like. I mean, it was extravagant, beautiful ship.
So with Morgan's permission, White Star chairman J. Bruce Ismay began work on what would be known as the Olympic-class ships, the Olympic, the Titanic, and the Britannic. Mm-hmm. The Olympic was the first to be built and was actually considered the lead ship. There was something actually more luxurious technically than the Titanic. Mm-hmm. It was really successful and well-loved, but on its fifth voyage, it ran into some issues.
Okay.
On September 20th, 1911, while passing the military vessel, the Hawk, the Olympic made an unexpected turn and was like caught off guard. They crashed.
Oh.
The Olympic was able to limp back to port with a big old gash in its side, but it was mm-hmm. really, really badly damaged.
Right.
And a trial later found out that the White Star was at fault and they had to pay for it. The damage to both ships. So it was super expensive.
Yeah, of course.
And they also paid for the legal fees on top of that. So when the Titanic was built and it left for its maiden voyage on April 10th, 1912, having been delayed several times because it had to sacrifice parts for the repair of the Olympic. Mm-hmm. Her first voyage took her from London to France, then to Ireland, and then the trek began across the Atlantic to New York before sinking, striking the iceberg and sinking, and then not being seen again by human eyes for almost 100 years. Mm-hmm. But following the sinking of its kin, the Titanic, the Olympic went on to have an extremely successful 24-year career as an ocean liner. It served during World War I, where she earned the nickname Old Reliable for its impenetrable hull. It actually collided with a lot of ships and took them down.
Wow. A cruise liner.
Yeah.
Took them down. That's impressive. Okay.
In 1919, she was re-outfitted to be a civilian passenger ship and served as an ocean liner until 1935, where she eventually retired. And then she was dismantled for scrap metal and gotten rid of. So doesn't even exist anymore.
Right, right, right.
So that's all fact. But after the Olympics crash with the Hawk, the paths of the conspiracy actually come apart. So we have to step back a little bit. Was the Olympic really the successful ship that we think it was? It's kind of that, I guess you could say it's the concept of if you replace all the parts of a ship over the course of like several years, is it still the same ship if all the places are replaced?
Right.
You could put it that way. But then there's like some other little tidbits in here that get a little bit more complicated. So right. Conspiracists believe that following the accident, the Olympic became a financial disaster. It required a lot of repairs that were extremely expensive. Mm-hmm. It wasn't making any money sitting at the port waiting to be repaired.
No, of course not.
So the company made a switch. The newly built second ship would take on the name of the Olympic, all shiny and new, while the damaged older ship would be repurposed as the Titanic, which would then be scuttled in an accident from which the White Star Line would collect an insurance payment to replace the brand new ship. The new ship.
Right.
All while the ship originally built as the Titanic would have sailed on as the Olympic. The only thing that ruined the plan, though, was the iceberg. They weren't counting on the iceberg. They didn't want people to die. And I'll get to that a little bit, just a few more paragraphs, I promise.
But I mean, I guess that would kind of make sense because, you know, the reason the Titanic sunk was because of a big gash in the hull. And if the Olympic already had a gash in the hull, it'd probably already be weakened. So it'd be easy to just open it back up again. I don't know. I'm thinking like people, like scars and stuff, but boats aren't people.
No, but you're right.
Boats aren't people.
Boats aren't people. Boaty McBoatface might beg to differ, but it makes sense though, right? Like it's already weak there anyway. And then we're going to get into some kind of weird evidence coming up here.
Okay.
Some other conspiracists also believe something a little bit darker. That J.P. Morgan was actually behind the switch and eager to use an inferior ship to drown his enemies on board. That's another possibility, but it's not super
backed
up.
That is dark.
Yeah.
I want to drown my enemies and, you know, the other 1,400 and, you know, 95 people. Oh, well.
Exactly.
So. Collateral damage, you know.
So let's talk about some of the evidence that people kind of support these claims, because these are pretty bold, right? So
Right. Those are bold claims.
Enhance, guys, enhance. So there are some a recent popular Reddit post by user Brezimac examines some pictures. For listeners who care to inspect, I'll post these pictures on our Instagram. But if you really zoom in, the names of each of these ships is toward the bow. It's kind of hard to see with their tiny white letters toward the top of the white railing. Sammy, I will share my screen with you.
Okay.
So the first photo is of the RMS Olympic in dry dock. And if you look at the top row of portholes within the white railing right here, and you look at the grouping of the last five portholes directly under the first smokestack here, you'll see how they're like clustered with two close together and one set apart.
Right.
And then two more close together, right? These last five guys here. That's of the Olympic and dry dock.
Okay.
The next photo shows the Titanic being built, which shows the same portholes placed evenly apart right here. So that's the same spot on the ship.
Right.
The next photo is of the Titanic on its maiden voyage. And if you look at the portholes, you'll notice they're uneven again, like the Olympic's portholes right here.
Oh.
See?
That's tricky.
The last image is of the Olympic right after the sinking of the Titanic. And you'll notice that the portholes are evenly spaced again, like the Titanic.
Wow. That's nuts.
Now, there is an answer to this. However, a website that was hellbent on the debunking of this conspiracy. Seriously, it was a real bummer. Said that the answer to this one is pretty simple. The Titanic had 14 portholes on the port side C deck when launched. But in the following months, she received two extra for better light and air. In fact, both the Titanic and the Olympic were launched with 14 portholes on the port side and 15 on the starboard side. However, during the Titanic's outfitting, she had two portholes added to light the cruise galley and the washroom, which resulted in a total of 16, as seen in the maiden voyage photos. But by the time of her disaster, the Olympic had already had her major retrofit, adding the windows to match.
Okay.
So there's a possibility that there was some construction going on, and that apparently at this time it wasn't uncommon for ships to be sent out on their maiden voyages, even like with a couple of repairs that still needed to be done. There was like still some construction happening because they were like, we'll do that on the road.
They were little things that didn't affect like the structural you know, soundness of the ship. So they're like, you know, hey, we're going to send it out and test it, I guess, and then, you know, make repairs when it gets back.
Exactly.
Okay.
There was also the lack of publicity. Historians muse that it was strange that the Titanic didn't receive the kind of publicity that the Olympic did the year before.
But right.
That really shouldn't come as a surprise. The Olympic was built to be the most luxurious ship in the world. But the Titanic's maiden voyage, the Olympic had been in service for a year already.
Right. Yeah. And I was thinking that, you know, it was from, you know, the Titanic was designed to be kind of like the little sister to the Olympic. You know, it wasn't supposed to be as extravagant. It was still very, very extravagant, but not as much so as the Olympic. So, of course, it didn't get the kind of publicity. It didn't really need it. The company was already known for the Olympics, so people would obviously buy the tickets to ride on the Titanic regardless.
Exactly. The Titanic, it was just smaller than its sister, and it was no longer big news, and people weren't really interested, and the passenger list wasn't even full on the maiden voyage. There also wasn't anything like newsworthy about her until she hit the iceberg. That's what made the ship popular.
Right.
But the Titanic was also not open to the public. While the Olympic was open to the press and the public to tour before its maiden voyage, the Titanic was not, except to the Board of Trade Inspection. But this is also debunked by the crew being overwhelmed with the repair of the Olympic still.
Right.
They also said that the bulkheads were intentionally deficient. Like, so when she sank, we remember that scene in the Titanic when they're discussing why the ship is doomed after she hits the iceberg. The architect points to the blueprints and shows how the water will overflow the bulkheads back and back and back until she's at the bottom of the ocean.
Right.
Was that intentional?
Yeah, that always kind of confused me because it was built to survive that sort of a crash.
It's true that the Titanic's bulkheads didn't extend to the top and therefore weren't sealed for a number of reasons. One being that a collision resulting in that kind of water overflowing the top of a bulkhead is extremely unlikely in the first place. Mm-hmm. Also, a sealed design would restrict access to certain parts of the ship. Like, so if it's for a military ship, yeah, sure, seal it. But if they need like access to that area, they can't seal that because otherwise we wouldn't have a laundry room or like we wouldn't have access to this hallway. And even ships with sealed bulkheads can still sink because they can flip over. So that wouldn't have necessarily saved the ship from its doom either.
Yeah.
The ship was also wildly uninsured, which I thought was strange. Historian Mark Chernside examined the insurance argument that the ship would be intentionally sunk to claim insurance benefits. Quoting Ismay, the guy who helped build it, the chairman.
Right.
The Titanic cost $7.5 million and was insured for $5 million, I understand. The fact is backed up by the IMM's American Vice President Philip A.S. Franklin, who confirmed the insurance policy. That means it was only insured for 2/3 of its value. There was some speculation that the insurance policy had been nearly quintupled 5 days before the maiden voyage, but historians found that to be false too.
Weird.
This was an interesting one that I really didn't believe. Like, somebody tried to debunk this, but I'm a little questioning. You can call me a conspiracist on this one. I'm a skeptic. One claim states that more than 50 first-class passengers canceled at the last minute. Many of them were friends and business associates of J.P. Morgan, including Morgan himself claiming he was ill. But Morgan was found 2 days later by a reporter in good health at a French resort with his mistress.
Okay.
Morgan also had several valuable bronze statues removed from the ship just 1 hour before she sailed.
Okay. Oh.
He didn't want those at the bottom of the ocean. So if he knew he was going to be scuttled anyway, he's like, I'm not going on that ship. I'm going to go, you know, hang out with my lady over here. But, you know, you guys, you know,
And let me take those statues.
Sail away. Yeah, I'm going to take those statues.
That's weird. Okay.
Also, Florence Ismay, wife of J. Bruce Ismay, chairman of White Star, also canceled along with their children, claiming that they were ill, but went on a motoring holiday instead in Wales. But if they got off because they were, but like there's kind of a caveat here. It's like if all these people got off because they were afraid of an accident or insurance fraud, why didn't anybody say anything?
Maybe they were in on it or they had a cut.
That's true. I mean, anything is possible these days. So there is a long list of other evidence that has all been kind of debunked by this person who's a real killjoy. But they said that there's like other theories saying that apparently several of the crew members refused to sail on the Titanic. Some like saying like, we'll wait for the next ship. You guys go. But your port, Mel. Go.
No. Go. We'll catch the next bus.
Also alive. some of the Titanic's lifeboats had RMS the Olympic written on them, apparently. Like, some of them were donated to, like, scout troops, and, like, they were, like, kind of used again. But, like, some people removed the nameplates on them and found, RMS Olympic under them. It was like, was this just, like, put on top of this? Was this originally the Olympic and they just slapped, you know, a sticker on it? Maybe. Numerous ships were also stationed nearby at the time of the sinking of the Titanic, despite a coal strike at the time. So why were all these coal ships in the area if they're all on strike?
Right.
So that was kind of a strange one. Also, there was they claimed that linoleum flooring was just covered with carpets, which I don't know how they can prove that at this point. And then
I don't think they can, but
some say the Titanic didn't actually hit an iceberg, that it hit another boat.
I've heard that conspiracy.
It was just drifting with its lights out, and that it was supposed to be there to save people, but it didn't go the way it was supposed to. But I have no proof of it. I was focused more on whether they swapped the ships.
Right.
So, but after the sinking of the Titanic, White Star Line received a tidy sum of $1 million in insurance money, which equates to about way more than $98.2 million today.
Oh, my God.
Which
okay.
ruined its insurance company. Like, insurance company was Lloyd's of London was like, no more. I can't. Sorry.
We're out of money.
Out of money.
Like, they declared bankruptcy.
Yep. Oops. Theory suggests the iceberg also wasn't part of their plan. Like I said, they intended for the Titanic to suffer some sort of failure that resulted in the destruction of the problem ship so that they could collect the insurance money for sure.
Right.
But they did not intend to kill 1,500 people. Oops. This theory does go into a lot more engineering, physics, and science than I'm comfortable accurately discussing. I don't want to like read you guys a textbook. I'm sorry. But it's pretty interesting. It's anything is possible. It pretty much comes down to the ships were not identical, though. And it would have been a pretty big feat to convince people that the Olympic was the same ship if it was indeed the second ship in disguise. But apparently, they did some really great repair work on the Olympic. But what a concept.
That's really interesting. No, I've always been very, like, terrifyingly fascinated with the Titanic. Like, even since I was a kid, it was just, you know, it's something that creeped me out. And to this day, I don't go on cruises because I've just read so much about the Titanic that, you know, I'm paranoid to go on cruises, and people are always like, oh, you should come on a cruise. We're going to go on this cruise, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, I just can't.
To be fair to cruises, I've been on one and they are quite fun, but yeah, I know that there's like a kind of a trapped in a tuna can kind of feeling.
Yeah. Well, and it's not just that, but it's the thought of, you know, if this goes down in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bye. I guess I'll die.
Oh, I'm terrified of open water. It's the worst.
I like open water, but not like that.
If I can't see the bottom, I can't see the shore.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. If I can't see the shore, then yeah. Like,
that's a terrifying concept, guys. That's like,
it's just, there's
spooky,
so
isn't it?
Much out there that we don't know.
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
We don't know what's at the bottom of the ocean in some places because we can't get down there.
If you put Mount Everest at like the bottom of the Marianas Trench, I think the peak is still like 2 miles, 25 miles, one of the two, several miles, 2 miles
words
are hard,
top
guys.
Of the water. Yes, words are hard. I mean, that's
wave goodbye to brain cells.
But yeah, it's just terrifying, you know, so I just, the ocean, it's creepy and majestic and terrifying and beautiful all at the same time.
And remember, guys, sharks can't bite you if you don't go in the water in the first place.
Fair. That is very fair.
Cows are far more dangerous. Anyway, we digress. Titanic, maybe it didn't sink. Maybe it was the Britannia. No, not the Britannia. The Olympic. And it went on to be very successful for many, many years.
Did you hear that they're making a new Titanic? They're rebuilding a Titanic.
Yes.
You know, they're actually like making an identical copy of it that's going to cruise around and stuff like that.
Someone with far too much money and not the right ideas to do with it.
Somebody who, you know, obviously hasn't learned from history.
You know, maybe put that to some really good use, like feeding people.
I mean, it's a cool concept, but,
you know,
I would never ride on a copy of the Titanic.
Why would you?
I feel like that'd be tempting fate, and I'm not about that life. Mm-hmm. Not exactly. About that life.
Not about it. Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, it's Sammy's turn with a cryptid.
Okie dokie.
So we're back. All right. I want to talk about something real quick.
Okay.
What do you think of the atomic vodka thing out of Chernobyl? Have you heard about this?
Oh, you posted that to our Facebook page.
I did.
I didn't read the article. I meant to and I forgot.
Okay.
But
so let me break it down a little bit. I can kind of sort of tell you. So apparently they took crops and water from a nearby aquifer in Chernobyl and used the materials, like the byproducts of that, to distill a vodka called atomic vodka. And they claim that their distilling process, and I asked producer Ian, and he tells me that this is a thing, that you can distill isotopes out of, like, some like water and stuff and out of in this case alcohol, and they've created this basically non-radioactive alcohol out of materials that are from Chernobyl.
I don't trust that. Would not drink that.
Right? Oh my gosh.
Leave it to Russia though to make nuclear vodka. That's
so strange.
No, once again, the whole tempting fate thing. I do not want to wake up with like a third arm growing out of the center of my chest because I decided I was going to, you know, play God with nuclear vodka. That's a hard pass for me.
Suddenly cancer.
Suddenly cancer.
Like seriously, what a weird, whoever does.
Did it say how much it was selling for?
I didn't look, but I can. Let's to the Google, guys.
Yeah, because I'm curious that I feel like it would probably be expensive.
Searched atomic Google. That's not what we're looking for, guys.
Nope, that is not what we're looking for.
Atomic vodka.
I just assume that it would be expensive. Like that doesn't seem like the kind of thing that's like, oh hey, let's just go down to the local, you know,
that's like a
wine and spirits and pick it up.
It's not even top shelf. It's like we gotta like unlock that out of the safe.
Yeah.
We gotta,
you know, the really fancy bottles that, you know, cost like $1,200.
You know, let's see. Oh, maybe. I will have to do some more research. This is absolutely bizarre, but I can't find a price now.
Is it absolute bizarre?
That's my job. You fired.
That was bad. I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh. Well, I can't find out how much it is, but I will have to do some more research on that and I'll find out by the end of this episode.
Okay. All right. Well, in the meantime, I'm going to go ahead and start talking about my topic and you keep trying to find a price.
Go for it.
So, have you ever been minding your own business when all of a sudden you kind of see something out of the corner of your eye, like a shadowy figure just out of the line of sight? But when you turn to see it, there's nothing there.
I have a conspiracy podcast. I am never minding my own business, but go ahead.
So this cryptid is known as a shadow person, a shadow figure, a shadow being, or a black mass. And it's extremely common and no one really knows what they are. But there are a lot of potential explanations.
Hmm.
So shadow people have been appearing worldwide throughout history. They appear in just about every culture's folklore and are known by many names. In some places, they're known as jinn, which is from Islamic folklore, and it's kind of like a genie, but they take like a shadowy form. There's creatures in Native American folklore that are like this, you know, just shadowy masses that take the forms of people. Not just people. They take many forms, but some of the most common forms are the Hat Man, which is a tall man-shaped figure wearing some sort of hat. Other common forms include the Hooded Monk, black smoke or mist people, shadow animals, peeking shadows, which usually take the form of children, and red-eyed shadows, which are usually malevolent. They're believed to be evil and aggressive in nature, although few people, and then some people consider these shadow people to be guardian angels as well.
Hmm.
So, as far as a description of what they are, usually larger than a normal shadow. So just kind of think like sun setting, long shadow sort of thing, but standing straight upright,
ooh,
not on the ground.
Ooh. Okay. Ooh.
They don't resemble the shadow of the person who sees it. So it doesn't look like your shadow. It looks definitely like somebody else's shadow, which that creeps me out. They have quick, jerky movements. They quickly disintegrate into walls or mirrors, which also creeps me out because there's so many creepy stories about mirrors.
I just don't like mirrors. I just don't like mirrors. Let's just be honest. Like mirrors in a bathroom, just like shut the curtain. Like,
right.
Like, that's like my favorite part to decorate in my Halloween parties is the bathroom.
Is the mirror?
The mirror.
Oh,
yeah.
Is the bathroom. Right, right, right. Yeah, you put blood in the bathtub last year.
We'll see what we do
that
this year.
Super cool.
We'll see.
I'm excited. So they range from being mist-like to being completely solid like a human. Some of them may have eyes that, you know, vary in color. And they usually have certain traits based on their eye color. The red-eyed ones, like I mentioned, tend to be more malevolent. White-eyed shadows are like faster, more logical, and they stand still a lot more. So it's just, you know, different traits depending on the different colored eyes they've got. You know, that's, you know, I don't know how to, that's just, I guess, how. I don't know. I lost my train of thought and just that happened. Okay, anyway. So as far as sightings go, I couldn't find like any real official sources. So I had to use Reddit as my sources. So I've got a lot of Reddit names.
That's okay.
Usernames.
I did too.
I thought that was kind of funny when you're like, I was thinking to myself, you're like, Redditor so-and-so. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm using Reddit too. So, okay, we're good.
We're good.
So, I've got a couple of stories here. First one starts in the late 1960s. Redditor Sniggity encountered shadow people on three separate occasions. The first time they caught one looking through their bedroom window before disappearing, which don't peek in my window, please. That's so creepy. The second was a few months later when they woke up to five shadow people lurking aimlessly around their bedroom.
Oh.
And then the third and final... Yeah, just mingling, you know, having a casual stroll through the bedroom late at night. The third and final time was late at a summer camp. They were laying in their bed in their bungalow when shadowy figures appeared and began walking in circles around the bed. In all three occasions, the figures were all pitch black, darker than the dimly lit room. This user has experienced all they want from shadow people and hopes to never encounter one again. I wouldn't either after that sort of thing.
All they want. Like, why would you want any at all? Like, that's stay away. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I'll pass. Second story, after a poor night of sleep, Redditor Lostful Codex.
A poor night of sleep. There's your first problem.
Right? And we'll get to that, yeah. I promise. They laid down midday to take a nap, which, God bless midday naps, they're the best. They recalled a strange feeling in their head, but believed it to be a side effect of sleep deprivation. Then from the corner of their room, they heard South Park as if it was, as if there was a television sitting right beside their bed, although there isn't. I guess just they heard the South Park theme song. I don't know.
Weird.
A ringing and high-pitched whooshing sound joined in the chorus, and no matter how hard they tried, they couldn't lift their arms or head. So, like, sleep paralysis. Then they heard a knock at the window. Behind the glass pane crouched a dark, faceless figure. A second figure of identical stature entered through the bedroom door and sat at the edge of the bed. The shadow person spoke, "I'd be afraid too. This is what nightmares are made from."
No.
Right?
No. No. No.
Like, I'm laughing, but this is nervous laughter.
No.
It's so creepy. Lostful Codex was confident that it was a dream, but it seemed inescapable. The room faded in and out, then the user woke. It was easily the scariest experience they'd ever had with lucid dreaming. Ugh.
No.
Ugh. I know.
Ooh. Okay. Oh.
Right?
Ooh. What is with, ooh, like, the sleep paralysis and, like, waking up to people sitting on your chest and scary? I've never had sleep paralysis, and I really hope it never happens, ever. Ever. I'd, yeah, probably pee myself.
I have no desire. I have no desire to have any sort of sleep paralysis. That just sounds terrifying. And I've read a lot about it, just because it's such an interesting thing, despite it being absolutely terrifying. It's interesting. And it's just that your brain wakes up, or part of it wakes up before your body, and you're just kind of stuck there halfway between waking and dreaming.
Yeah.
You know, so your brain is still dreaming while you're awake and lucid, mm-hmm, and it's placing dream elements over the actual physical, what you can see, you know, and your body can't move, because when you go into REM sleep, your body shuts down so that you don't hurt yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So you're still in REM sleep, but you're awake.
A friend of mine, when she was pregnant, when she would, before she knew about this, she would sleep on her back, and mm-hmm, the baby would sit on a part of her back that would, like, basically paralyze her from the legs down.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that was,
it would pinch the spinal cord.
Part of, like, her sleep paralysis was just sleeping incorrectly when she was pregnant. And, like, oh, that would just send my heart
terrifying
rate through the roof. Like,
woo, yeah. Woo. No, like I said, I've done a lot of research on it, and I've read a lot about it and stories about it. And it just sounds, I mean, absolutely terrifying.
Oh, thank you.
I don't know how I would handle that. You know, I would probably die.
Yes. But anyway, shadow people.
Okay. So the next story, a few years ago, Redditor Mistress of Dark, what an edgy name. Edgy. Mistress of Dark.
Maybe these are
sleeping,
the shadow people.
They were sleeping over at a friend's house and had trouble sleeping. As they were lying awake, a tall, solid black silhouette entered the bedroom. It wore a top hat and long coat and looked like a male figure. He sat in a chair beside the bed and stared at them. After a few seconds, he started talking. The user doesn't remember the conversation exactly, as the experience took place over 5 years ago, but it was a harmless encounter, and the shadow person seemed genuinely interested in them. Then a second shadow person appeared, the same black silhouette, but this time a woman. Strangely, she was crawling.
Mm-mm-mm.
The man sitting beside the bed in the chair told them not to look at the woman, and or not to look, and the woman wouldn't notice them. She was not a good entity. Shortly after, the woman left, and at dawn, the shadow man too vanished.
No.
The fact that she was crawling.
Yeah.
Like,
that's creepy.
I'm picturing not like hands and knees crawling. I'm picturing horror movie, you know, crawling where their feet are flat on the floor, and then you know what,
yes,
I'm saying,
yes,
right?
Yes.
That's what I'm picturing, and that's probably what it is.
That's creepy.
I'm just going to assume that's probably exactly what it was. Last story I have is a little bit longer. This one wasn't from Reddit. This one was from an actual like website about shadow people. This, I think it was like shadowperson.net or something like that. And it's just hundreds of short and long stories from people about their experiences with shadow people. So my first experience with a shadow person was on Christmas night, 2012. I opened so many great gifts and got everything that I asked for that morning, including a giant sketchbook that I had been begging for. I went to two family parties that day, and when I returned home, I was very tired. I got into my pajamas, laid in bed, and fell asleep almost immediately. In my bedroom, if you were to stand in the doorway, my bed is to the right, and to the left is my wooden desk with a leather chair facing away from the bed. Anyway, for some strange reason, in the middle of the night, I woke up as if I had been jolted awake. Normally, when I wake up, I'm very drowsy and fall back asleep immediately. This time was different. I felt wide awake the minute my eyes flew open. It was very strange, and when my eyes adjusted to the dark, I realized there was a dark figure sitting in my chair. I couldn't move. I felt my heart pounding hard in my chest, and I wanted to throw my blankets over my head and hide, but I couldn't. The figure was just sitting there, staring at me, but I felt cold chills running down my spine as if the figure was unfriendly. It looked like a large man, but the figure was completely black and I couldn't make out any details. I squinted my eyes shut, hoping that maybe when I opened them, there would be nothing there and my eyes were just playing tricks on me. When I finally opened my eyes again, the figure was still there. I was terrified. Eventually, I convinced myself that I had left my huge sketchbook on the chair and that's what the figure was. I fell into an uneasy sleep. The next morning, when I woke up, I was horrified to see that the sketchbook was not on the chair. Nothing was. Normally, I don't believe in ghosts or paranormal stuff, but this really shook me up. Something was sitting in that chair watching me while I slept.
That's creepy. That's really, really creepy. I don't like that.
I figured I haven't done like a really creepy one in a long time, so it was about time. Woo. I need to scare my friend who had to call her husband to help walk her out of the car.
Well, there you go. I hope you're happy. Now I can't sleep either.
So there's quite a few explanations as to what shadow people are, because like I said, they're a very, very common phenomena. One explanation is that it's sleep paralysis, you know, which we've already talked about. Another explanation is that it's something called apophenia, which is the experience of seeing meaningful patterns or connections in random or meaningless data. And another one that's similar to that is pareidolia, which is the tendency to interpret a vague stimulus as something known to the observer, such as seeing shapes in clouds, seeing faces in inanimate objects or abstract patterns, or hearing hidden messages in music. So both of those are kind of, you know, just tendencies on, you know, that some people have to, you know, go outside and look at clouds. Oh, I see a horse, I see a hand, you know, stuff like that. So they're just two sort of, I don't know, things that your brain does like, with things like that.
Yeah, like the ability to see like faces and things, like a socket looks like shocked.
Yeah. You know? Shocked face, you know. Okay, I'm done.
No.
I'm done. Another explanation is that it is just heightened emotions, you know, just causing people to panic and see things that aren't there. Sleep deprivation, especially in users of methamphetamines. There's been a lot of studies that people who, you know, do meth, you know, they have problems sleeping and that this can cause, you know, hallucinations, especially when things like micro naps come into play where you've been up for days on end and your brain starts to take small naps while you're wide awake. Do you have experience with that?
Actually, no. I'm surprised I haven't done that yet. I guess I sleep just long enough in my naps that like, I guess I do like find myself drifting off like while I'm watching something and then it's like, I don't realize I've been asleep, I guess. I lose time sometimes, I guess. But yeah, okay. Naps.
So some of the more interesting explanations of what this could be is time travelers or extra dimensional travelers. This suggests that time travelers are not perceivable for human beings, but now we're beginning to become more aware of time travel, which is resulting in the visibility of shadow people. So basically, it's like saying people from other dimensions or time travelers, they don't really exist in our dimension or time. So the shadow people are just kind of a bleed through of these time travelers who are just here visiting.
Makes sense.
Which I thought that was interesting, but weird.
Kind of like a carbon copy that's like been left in that certain timeline that they're not actually there anymore. They've already.
Right.
Interesting. Well, I guess like, you know, like Baron Trump, like we mentioned.
Yeah. Bad omens is another thing, you know, that they could just be an omen of bad things coming, misfortune, especially when they're seen in hospitals, they're considered a bad omen. Another explanation is that they are the astral projections of people. So for those of you who don't know what astral projection is, it is thought to be when you leave your body, you know, kind of like an out-of-body experience, but one that you're in control of and you're doing on purpose. People practice things like astral projection where basically, you know, your body is alive and still functioning. It's just you kind of let your soul wander out of it. So this explanation says that it's kind of the soul of people astral projecting.
Like the movie Insidious kind of deals with that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Another explanation is that they're demons or ghosts. You know, so take that one with a grain of salt. But yeah, those are all the explanations I have. But I do have a special extra little section. This is the ways to get rid of them section.
I like it.
Which I got these from some person's website. I'm not going to mention it. It's just because this seems really, a lot of these are very.
Let's take notes, guys. We got to take notes. Come on.
A lot of these are very, like, Karen's essential oils sort of ways to get rid of them. Okay. So there are,
thanks, Stacey.
There are 14 different methods to get rid of them. The first one is call upon and invoke the protective powers of God, Jesus Christ, or the Archangel Michael. Just saying Jesus's name can be enough. They're instantly repelled and banished because the light is too strong.
Power of Christ compels
you. Yes. Two, you say protective prayers. A super powerful one is the Archangel Michael prayer of protection, which I did not know that was a thing. I'm going to assume it's a Catholic thing because they have prayers for a lot of different saints and angels. So I'm assuming it's a Catholic prayer, but I wasn't raised Catholic, so I don't know. So somebody let me know if I'm just wrong, because I would not be surprised if I was. A third way to get rid of them is to just be very vocal and yell out to them, demand they leave, laugh out loud at it. They just don't like loud sounds. To go along with that, number four is to put on loud music. They don't like loud sounds. But I mean, if you're sleep paralyzed, you're not really going to be able to make any noise. So
what you're saying is that the people who listen to death metal are either being counterintuitive or they're being smarter than they like. If they, I can't tell if they're trying to summon demons or
or banish
if they're
them.
Trying to repel them, but appreciate that they're there.
Yeah. Death metal protection.
Yes, death metal protection.
Number five is to use sage.
Faraday rage.
Faraday rage instead of a Faraday cage. I like that. So the fifth thing is to use sage and fully sage the area, yourself, all family members, and a home. That practice is called smudging. Basically you light some sage and just kind of like let the smokes waft around your house. And it's supposed to, according to like occult practices, it's supposed to ward off evil spirits. Step six, or not step six, but suggestion six, they do not like and will be repelled by a sacred mix of these four natural, protective, and magical herbs. You're supposed to mix equal amounts of sage, cedar, sweetgrass, and lavender. So they just don't like those. So you mix those together in like a potpourri bowl and leave that out on your coffee table next to your better homes and gardens, you know, and that'll keep them away, I guess.
Nice.
I just,
nice.
That is immediately what came to mind.
It's pleasant.
Seven is a banishing ritual. I can't say that I know any of those off the top of my head, so I would probably be more likely to go with the potpourri bowl filled with magic herbs. Number eight is, in worst cases, or if you just feel you want the reassurance, seek an expert in the field, such as a shaman or a house cleanser, or an old priest and a young priest. Number nine was weird. Send it into the violent... the violet flame. I thought it was violent. No, it's violet. Send it into the violet flame. I don't know what that means.
Away with
you. Away with you, I guess. I don't know. Number 10 is to use protective crystals. Their frequency is very disruptive for shadow people, apparently. Number 11 is learn other psychic protection tools and techniques. Number 12, make an effort to watch your thoughts and step out of negative thinking. Because I guess that'll...
Oh, that's always... You should always practice law of attraction. Yeah. You should always be in positivity because people... There are no positive worlds. There are only positive people. So if you are a positive person, then every situation you're in will be positive.
At least you can hope it will be.
On your end. If it's somebody else's being negative, then that's their problem.
So that one is more just a... You should probably just do that in life anyway. I personally try to be a positive person. You know, and be have a positive outlook on life. Some might call it naivety, but I like to look on the bright side. Number 13 is to clear the energy of your home. Basically, clear clutter, clean, take out the garbage.
What are you trying to say, Sammy?
Take out the garbage.
What are you trying to say?
Scoop the cat litter. You know, maybe actually
you could be a little more direct. You could just tell me to clean my house.
Dust your, you know, knickknacks for a change, Tess.
Dust your own knickknacks.
And the last suggestion is to reduce the effects of electromagnetic energy by using crystals or other known methods. So more crystals. So two of those were crystals, but
not rocks.
You know, just get some really nice rocks or one of those. Salt lamps, I guess. I don't know.
Which, you know, depending on who paid for whatever study, are either good or bad for you.
Yep. Just depends on which confirmation bias you want to go with.
Exactly.
So
if it works for you and it makes you happy, then go for it.
So that is all I have about shadow people. They're really creepy.
Oh my gosh. That's
and
very
I don't
creepy.
Like them. And I had to talk about them because I needed a creepy one this season. Because I don't think I had a creepy one last season.
Thanks for sharing. Yeah. That was really creepy.
You're welcome. And shout out to my friend Sierra. She's the one that had to have her husband go get her from the Black Eyed Children episode.
Well, Sierra, I hope you're very safe walking back to your car.
Well, she's currently
made it safely.
She's currently in the car. Her and her husband are moving cross country, and they're actually going to stop through here this coming week, next week.
Cool.
I don't remember this week. So, you know, this episode will actually, I think, come out after or the day that they get ready to leave here.
Nice. Well, cool. I hope they have a very safe journey. And I hope anybody else who's still traveling, you know, before the end of the summer season, mm-hmm. you know, is having a blast and staying safe.
Yeah. When this comes out, let's see, it'll be the 15th. So we'll be coming up on Labor Day, which is at the end of the month. Do you have any plans for Labor Day?
Gosh, not off the top of my head. We're starting to plan for the Halloween party, so we're starting to buckle down.
I think I'm going to a convention on Labor Day weekend, but I'm not entirely sure. It's expensive, so I'm debating whether or not I want to do that, especially since I am getting ready to buy a house. So I don't necessarily know if I'm going to go to this convention or not. So...
Good luck.
Thanks.
I would save your money, hon. Like, as somebody who has purchased a house, I would save your money.
Yeah, you're probably right. I'm going to have to pay that mortgage, and that's going to eat up a lot of money.
those closing costs are going to hurt.
Oh, yeah. Yep. That's not going to be fun.
Yeah.
But.
Well, all right. Well, let's wish Sammy luck all together and, you know, stay safe out there and have good travels and think good thoughts. Be positive. No shadow people. Let the darkness go. Just banish you.
And don't forget, Big Brother is watching.
Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Conspiracies and Cryptids with Sammy and Tessa. Don't forget to check out our website, www.conspiriesandcryptids.com, for more episodes and other information.
And if you're really enjoying what we're doing, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/cryptipod. That's CRYPTIPOD. There you can find different ways to support us and get some awesome goodies along the way.
While you're at it, you can also find us on all of your favorite social media platforms like Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's any one of those at Cryptipod.
And if you're enjoying our podcast, please think about leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. Leave us 5 stars and a nice little blurb about why you like us. It helps us to gain some traction and find some new listeners.
And while you're at it, don't forget to tell your friends, because our friends are your friends.
And don't forget, Big Brother is watching.